85442, Kieran v. State of Nevada. Mr. Anderson, you ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, would you like to reserve any time?
5 minutes, please, Your Honor.
All right, you got it.
May it please the Court, my name is Elliot Anderson. I'm for the appellant. Just to start this presentation, I'd like to take a point of personal privilege and say it's an honor to be here for my first oral argument in Carson City, so I'm very honored to be here with you all. I wanted to start off by giving the Court a brief roadmap of where I intend to take this oral argument, absent any questions, and that it's going over the three paths the Court could take to resolve this case in favor of appellant. The first issue is evidence of mootness, the second issue is mootness, and the third issue is considering and adopting the voluntary cessation doctrine to mootness. I will also have brief notes about alternate affirmances that were raised by the state. First, the Court should hold that respondents did not offer any competent evidence of mootness. Below, the state relied on a bare attorney declaration that did not give a whole lot of details, did not explain their personal knowledge of those details. It doesn't satisfy the state's burden to show that the case is moot. They moved for dismissal based upon mootness. They didn't meet that burden with that evidence. Reversal and remand would be required in that instance. Second, even setting aside the evidence issue, the case is not moot. The Court should hold that it is not moot. Before the district court, we have acknowledgments in the record that the state acknowledged that Mr. Kieran challenged a policy and a policy as applied to him. The state's motion focused on the as-applied challenge and didn't reference any changes to any policy that was alleged in the petition, and of course is assumed as true on a motion to dismiss. There's a bunch of argument in the briefing about whether there's a policy or not, but there's acknowledgments in the record that there was a challenge to the policy, both from Mr. Kieran and from the state. And so in that instance, reversal and remand would also be required. Third, even if the case is moot, the record shows the state voluntarily ceased activity. Now, this would require an expansion of law. We've briefed the federal exception to mootness, the voluntary cessation doctrine. That's when someone voluntarily ceases illegal activity that's been complained of. And this case presents an ideal opportunity to adopt this doctrine, which is a well-worn federal doctrine that finds substantial development in federal case law, which the Court could rely on to expand the doctrine. Now, in that instance, we would ask that the Court adopt the doctrine and then vacate the order and reverse for further proceedings, because obviously now this was not developed, and we've cited case law that mootness is a jurisdictional question, so this was not raised by Mr. Kieran below. But we do think that there is the ability for the Court to consider that under federal case law that, of course, is persuasive in this instance, because this does get to the Court's power to hear a matter, which is a quintessential subject matter jurisdiction issue. And so that would be our argument for considering that. And just briefly on that, this oral argument will highlight some of the tactical litigation choices that were made by the state. And this is a long-running case. Mr. Kieran first tried to get a notary in 2014. It's made it up to the Supreme Court before a panel of Justice Douglas, Justice Gibbons, and Justice Cherry. Fourth, the Court should decline the state's invitation for all these alternative affirmance grounds. I'm going to channel my inner Justice Pickering here, right, where there were decisions made before the district court. There were certain issues that were developed before the district court. Mr. Kieran simply had no opportunity to address those, to build a record. More importantly, the district court did not make any rulings on those issues. And so there's a bit of an appellate procedural bar inception, as I'm calling it, as there's a number of different bars that the state would have to go through. They're not seeking alternative affirmance on issues that were raised and developed, and the court just didn't reach. And so that's why this isn't your ordinary alternative affirmance case. The court, I know, sometimes is inclined to take a look at these cases and wrap them up this way because, not wanting to push along something that might be futile through the judicial system given the state of the record. But we don't have that record here, so that's not there to support the state's ask. Moving on to issue one more in depth, again, we've talked about how there's no competent evidence of mootness. For the district court, this is in the record at 217, 218. There's only one volume because it's a district court record on appeal. Respondents offered a declaration from counsel. That declaration, what it was quite bare. It just said that the state contacted Mr. Kieran and informed him NDOC could give him a notary. And this was quite odd, I think, looking at this case in whole, because all of a sudden that just changed. For years, the position taken before courts in the state by the state was that they could not identify a man that they incarcerate. I mean, that to me is, you know, on its face, absurd and doesn't make any sense. And so looking at that, it really strikes really clearly as litigation conduct. And I wanted to point the court to two things in the record that occurred about a month or two after this declaration was made and the court dismissed the case. You see in the record at 448 and 449, you see kites issued by Mr. Kieran to NDOC, and you see the law library and the notary saying, I cannot do a notary without an ID. The AG cannot order me to do a notary. And so even after this case was dismissed and they're saying that they would do this, Mr. Kieran still couldn't get anywhere. So this is kind of making the point about why attorney declarations are not a great thing.
Anderson, may I ask you a question? Just a small factual matter, because you bring up the kites. Is this a matter of the notary saying, I will only accept an ID, or the NDOC saying, we will not provide a witness to give you an alternative path to notarize, or both?
It's both, Your Honor. I mean, that's certainly been the position of the notary. It's well established in the record. But again, even this court's case law reflects that position being taken before the 11th Judicial District Court. Now, that they didn't raise that argument before the Supreme Court, but they did in the proceedings below in the 11th Judicial District Court say that no member of NDOC could identify a man that they incarcerate. I mean, obviously, that raises a whole host of concerns that go far beyond this case. If we can't identify people we're incarcerating, we have either a security problem, or we have, we're imprisoning the wrong people. Not either way, not good. And that was the position taken. So, looking at this in the totality of this Mr. Kieran's journey to secure a notary, these positions have been taken by NDOC both ways. Did that answer your question, Justice Stiglitz?
It did. Thank you.
So just again to reiterate, this is showing tactical litigation conduct. Here we have an attorney declaration that they've offered you a notary. And Mr. Kieran, I think was clear in his opposition papers that he wanted to challenge the policy. He looked at this as a settlement type of discussion. And it was broader than just getting a couple of documents notarized. I think that's been, pro se pleadings are not always the clearest, but I think it was clear enough to pick up from this record. So moving on to issue two, it not being moot, I've already kind of talked about this, and I don't need to cite all of the, Bish versus Las Vegas Metro Police Department. I mean, the court knows that if there's any controversy remaining at all, the court is going to hold that it's not moot. And I think that's been pretty well established by the briefing, that there was a quasi-declaratory relief action, or saying that this policy was being indiscriminately applied and creating a two-tier system. So there's a lot remaining, and that's in the petition itself that's apparent, and that's also reflected in the papers. And if you look at the state's motion to dismiss, there was a motion to dismiss as to the as-applied challenge only. And that's at the record at 209. And with that declaration, which was the only evidence offered we've already touched on, there was nothing in there about a policy being changed, nothing like that. So that just wasn't a position taken. And just reminding the court, there is this argument that there is no policy. Okay, well, we've alleged that. This is a motion to dismiss. It wasn't developed factually. Mr. Kieran was shut down from doing any discovery. I think the record is full of denials that were not really challenging, but nevertheless, he tried. So he tried to develop these arguments and wasn't able to. Moving on to issue three, the voluntary cessation doctrine, I'd be harder pressed to think of a case that had such good facts to consider this doctrine and to show why it makes sense. I mean, this case has gone on in some form or fashion from 2014. I've never seen a footnote like that, which is in the court's prior order on this case with the prior panel that had kind of dealt with a piece of this dispute, where it said that the court was disturbed. So I just wanted to point that out. This has been briefed pretty extensively. And unless the court has, I think I'm going to save any argument for any alternative affirmance or arguments until I hear from the state. I think it might be addressed better that way, and reserve the remainder of my time.
Okay, thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. I've even been practicing longer than opposing counsel, and this is also my first time. I've appeared many times before this court in Las Vegas. Both the reasons are Justice Center and the new building, but this is the first time I've had the pleasure of coming to Carson City. I'd like to thank the court for this opportunity, and I would like to first put to rest something that I think is a little bit disingenuous. The parties in the prior case that is repeatedly referenced by counsel, those parties are not parties in front of you here today. And I think it's a little disingenuous to say that this case has anything to do with the prior case when the prior case involved a notary being sued rather than who we have here in front of you is a former director of NDOC and a chief deputy attorney general. But just going on to my case, Kieran's petition is moot because, one, should be like George Washington, you know, my eyes are getting worse in the service of my state, so please apologize for that. Kieran's petition is moot because, one, he admits that his personal documents were notarized. I mean, he admits that, and it's in the record. Two, he concedes that NDOC regulations make notaries available upon request when a declaration would be insufficient. That's in our regulations. We do it, and we did it in this case. Three, Kieran admits that he was provided access to a notary. And four, the documents attached to his petition establish that respondents Charles Daniels, the former NDOC director, and Randy Gilmer, chief deputy attorney general, had no policy of preventing inmates from accessing a notary when needed. A case becomes moot, as this court is well, when the dispute has been resolved. And it's clearly been resolved here. Kieran admits that he's got all the documents notarized and concedes he received the assurances that he could obtain notaries through the same means that he got through this case if he just kites for it. If he kites to be identified. Which he didn't do in this case. He goes off and he gets declined. He tries to present this 25-year-old expired private ID license, which the notary clearly had discretion to say, hey, that's not proper identification. And then he just turns around and files a motion for petition for writ of mandamus, even though there's no obligation that NDOC identify any of his inmates. And I want to talk to you about this a little bit because I think that there's a little bit of concern here about this argument that, hey, you know, that NDOC can't identify its inmates. Well, they can identify the inmates in that they know that inmate was convicted of a crime because they have mugshots, they have people going that. He's been convicted of the court. The court's remanded him to the custody of NDOC, and therefore we know it. What we don't know is because inmates, you know, they're criminals, and they have a habit of using false identities. And so what the NDOC can't do necessarily, and what they couldn't do in this case, because he didn't have a current valid ID on him when he was convicted. If he would have had one, it would have been in his iFile, and we wouldn't be going through this problem right now.
But what ability does he have to go, A, get an ID, bring in his own notary, or, and I guess the third question would be, when somebody identifies for purposes of a notary, if somebody comes in and swears, it would be that person is known to me as Elliot Anderson. I don't know if that's his true name, but that's what he's known to me. What does a notary require when using that alternative format? What do I have to know to attest that that is a person known to me to be Elliot Anderson?
That's a good question, you know. And I wish the Secretary of State would be more forthcoming about what they think that is required under the statute. But you know what the Secretary of State says? They say it's up to the notary to make that determination. And that's why they have full discretion in determining whether or not the person has provided sufficient evidence to determine who that person is. Kieran could have done that. He could have kited. I think that it's clear that when he did do it, even though after the case was dismissed as moot because he refused to accept our offer, we still went through and provided the identification. Contrary to Kieran's argument.
And I'm sorry, when you did go through and do it, who provided the information for the notary?
It was the lieutenant, correction officer.
So lieutenant came in and said, this is a person known to me as Mr. Kieran.
And to be honest with you, I do not know what he went through to make that determination, because that's not in the record, Your Honor. Contrary to the argument, Kieran does not allege facts in his petition that respondents have a policy preventing inmates from accessing notaries when needed. Kieran's argument was contradicted by NDOC regulations, and the documents attached to his petition established that no such policy existed. Because, for example, though, in Gonzales, the Ninth Circuit held that factual allegations in a complaint that are contradicted by documents attached to the complaint need not be accepted as true. And this court cited that with approval in the Kramer case, 131 Nevada, 1268.
But if the only opportunity inmates have is to use the NDOC notary, and the NDOC notary person providing those services will only accept a type of identification that they don't have for whatever reason, then where does that leave the inmate in addressing other legal or personal concerns that may arise in the family context and a civil context, out of state, in a banking context?
I would disagree with your premise, Your Honor, because I don't think there's any regulation that says some other notary can't come available. What we do is we provide notaries, though, for inmates. And I think that's clearly what happened here, Your Honor. We provided a notary. I mean, but what we can't do is we cannot order that notary to provide a notarization. She has the discretion to decide whether or not, according to the Secretary of State, she has the discretion to decide whether or not to accept that notary position.
Can any guard at the NDOC provide an alternative identification, or is there a policy about that?
There is no express policy. But there is an assurance that he was given, which is in the record, that Mr. Kieran, in the future, can use the same procedure to kite to request for identification, and then that identification could be provided to a notary.
Meaning that he can request in the future the lieutenant or somebody in that position to come in and provide
right.
a declaration.
Yes, Your Honor.
Right. Is there anything in the record?
That is in the record, Your Honor.
No. But is there anything in the record that would suggest that that procedure would not be available to any other inmates moving forward?
To any other inmate that would be? And I would imagine there's a possibility that there could be, that we could not identify, that he has so many aliases that he has no things. But let me tell you this, though. What I do know is in most instances, what happens is the person...
Let me back up to what the question was. Would that policy be available to any other inmates moving forward? Not whether they're going to get the notary, but whether they could have that same opportunity
yes.
to have a lieutenant or somebody else come in.
Yes, they would have the same opportunity.
Okay.
If you go into the record here, Record of Appeal 46 through, 48, establishes that Kieran requested a notary. We provided a notary. He provided a 25-year-old expired PI license. The notary said, hey, that's an expired PI license. I'm not going to accept that as voluntary things. The Secretary of State says that that's, on their website, says that, hey, that's a valid reason for denying the thing. And then he just turns around and he files his request for mandamus, even though nobody has an obligation to provide identification on his behalf.
Was the gravamen of the issue with the PI license that it was a PI license or that it was expired?
I think it was probably, and this would be just a guess, Your Honor, from my thing, but my understanding was that it was because it not only expired, but it had been expired for 25 years. And so that was...
What about a
because the
license?
Secretary of State says that it's up to the notary to determine whether or not the thing, so, and we don't have the notary's rationale below, but also she's not a defendant in this case either, or a respondent in this case.
But you had indicated earlier, if he would have had a driver's license with him when he was booked, then it would be part of a file that would be accessible that could provide an identification.
And then there would be no problem here.
But what if it was expired?
If it was expired at the time he was arrested?
No, what if he comes in
If it's a valid driver's license at the time he is, when he's arrested, and that is put into the I-file, that is considered to be, it was valid at the time we knew it, and therefore we can't, anybody then at NDOC could identify him because it was valid at the time when he was brought in for arrest.
But if you have a driver's license, it was valid at some point, so it's an identity document. He can't drive, but is it not him because it's expired?
Well, that's the thing that you have to raise with the Secretary of State, because the Secretary of State says that if it's expired, that it's a possibility that you can not accept it. And it's up to the full discretion of the notary whether or not to accept that expired driver's license.
And is the notary guided at all by or responsible at all for implementing NDOC policy? Let me back up. Does the notary work for the NDOC?
Some of these notaries do work for NDOC.
Okay, so if they work for the NDOC, could the NDOC say, you must notarize documents if there is a witness?
No, we could not, because notaries are not governed by NDOC policies. They're governed by NRS 240. And in other words, they cannot do something that they think is in violation of NRS 240 under the discretion provided therein.
But it could provide a basis if there was a driver's license on file to be used by someone to say, this person is known to me by a driver's license that was on file, and could provide a ID pursuant to a declaration.
Right. And then, like I said, if it was a driver's license that was on file and it hadn't expired at the time he was incarcerated, there would be no problem whatsoever.
How much discretion is in this context is the notary given?
According to the Secretary of State, she has full discretion. And in fact, Your Honor, I mean, you've all been attorneys working for law firms, right? And most of your law firms, right, had notaries that were there. And when the notary, if you brought a document to the notary and said, hey, notary, you know, we really need you to notarize this, and the notary comes back and says, well, I just don't think that's proper identification that you've provided me, and so I'm not going to notarize that document. You know, you as an attorney couldn't order that notary to say, hey, I can't, you have to notarize that document.
So even though we have statutes that prescribe how somebody can identify themselves, if your notary decides not to apply any of those statutes, that's just tough luck.
It's fully discretionary, yes. And so
what if they say we're not gonna notarize for black people?
Well, that would be discrimination. If the reason for is discriminatory reason, then of course you can. But because that you don't have discretion whether or not to notarize because they're black people, but you do have the discretion whether or not the person has provided proper identification.
So even if it is in adherence to the statute, there would be no way for someone to ever challenge that, is what I'm hearing, because it's completely in the discretion of a notary.
Well, because
how to apply a statute?
Because the statute provides that's the discretion for the notary. Okay. That's the reason why.
So if I show them a valid driver's license and they say not satisfied,
you just have to find another notary.
So that applies inside or outside of prison context.
In any context. And in fact, I would be very surprised that anybody would say, hey, you know, I'm going to try to force this notary to notarize a document.
But when you're providing the only notary that people have access to, when you're providing notary services in the prison, you do provide those services.
Yes, Your Honor.
And we'll strike that. You're saying they could bring in any notary to do it, but then they can't be assured that anyone will vouch for who they are because we just don't know who they are. So that kind of leaves a prisoner in a conundrum, doesn't it?
Well, like I said, a very few number of prisoners it may leave in that scenario. But the same thing is that they would have that same scenario if they're in the outside world. Say, for example, somebody is homeless, right? They don't have a birth certificate. They don't have a driver's license. They don't have an ID. They can't go get an ID because they don't have a birth certificate. They can't do anything. They go to a notary, and they say, "I don't have any family members." Same thing's going to happen to that person. It would be no different. I mean, the responsibility, the legislature has put the responsibility on identification on the person seeking the notary. It's not on the notary. Anyway, Your Honor, so for example, the first one, I guess I'm coming down to the end of my conclusions, but what I'd like to talk about is I'd like to talk about this thing about jurisdiction. Because while jurisdiction, the lack of jurisdiction cannot be waived, okay, the issue of jurisdiction, that the court has jurisdiction, can be waived. And I think this is clear from this court's argument in the appellants cannot, this court has held in the Langenstein case, appellants cannot raise new issues in an attempt to avoid dismissal on grounds of mootness. And the United States Supreme Court likewise held jurisdiction may not be sustained on a theory that plaintiffs has not advanced. And that's the Merrill Dow case. The Second Circuit explained, a party forfeits the invocation of subject matter jurisdiction when it fails to timely raise it, because the court must consider that they did not lack subject matter jurisdiction. There is no corresponding obligation to find and exercise subject matter jurisdiction on a basis that was not raised by the parties. Counsel has admitted that this issue was not raised below. That means it's waived or forfeited. And so I would just like to ask the court to, on the grounds that I've set forth in my brief and the arguments I presented here, to affirm the district court below and to dismiss the petition as moot, and that the petition is moot in any event.
Thank you.
Just to address respondents on the state's argument, I just want to kind of make this a little more basic. We've talked a lot about discretion, what the statute allows, et cetera. These were issues that just frankly weren't developed. They're just not developed in the record. I mean, there's very basic, minimal arguments about the standard for writ relief that's in there, but we're not getting into the nitty-gritty of a lot of these issues that the court was discussing today. And I wouldn't want the court to think that it needs to figure everything out today, right? We don't need to write a treatise with a potential order or opinion here. We just need to address the issue that was before the district court, which was mootness. And just a couple of specific points I wanted to talk about. We hear this issue that there may be contradictions with documents in the record that would belie the allegations. I mean, this is a standard that I've heard raised in a 12b-5 context, but we're not in a 12b-5 context. We're in, you know, talking about mootness here. There was no discussion of a policy in the state's briefing on the motion to dismiss. So there wasn't this argument made. Now, I get that this is a jurisdictional issue, and so if I'm going to live by the sword, I need to die by the sword as well. But the truth is that this is just on an issue that's been developed to really give the court, I think, comfort in reaching this issue. This was a very basic mootness question that was quickly done and processed by the parties in the district court below that didn't get the attention that it deserves, given kind of the issues, the long-running history with this case. It seems like everyone was trying to package this up and move this along, is my read of the record, to be frank. And I would urge the court to put the parties through their paces, to put the district court through its paces. Let's do this the right way. Let's figure out what's going on, because this does have ramifications outside of Mr. Kieran. This is a significant issue. We talk about rehabilitation and getting people back on their feet and trying to reduce recidivism. How are we going to do that if people can't handle their documents and get their affairs in order?
Mr. Anderson, within the state of Nevada, recent changes to the statute obviate the need for a notary in the Nevada context. Is that correct?
Are you talking about, I have the statute.
The penalty of perjury.
Is it, I'm just trying to get the citation here. I have it handy. It's NRS 208-165. Is that what you're referring to, Your Honor?
It's referring to the change that allows penalty of perjury.
I believe we're talking about the same thing, and Mr. Kieran's addressed this in the record. He explained it at the record in 427, 428. He talks about that at the record in 298 and 99. It's not an adequate, putting this in the writ context, it's not an adequate legal remedy that obviates the need for a notary, because I think banks in particular, you know, entities like that are very risk adverse. You know, when I'm not taking on pro bono cases, you know, we see this from institutional clients where they're risk adverse. They don't want to do something that's not out of the ordinary. And so, you know, if we have the opportunity to develop this issue more, you know, that's kind of the argument we could put on. We could talk about expert witnesses and bring them in and say, you know, from a bank standard of care, this is not something I'd recommend accepting because it's weird.
Even if you're talking about banks, like let's set aside, and I agree with Justice Stiglitz on what she's talking about, the change in the law, but if we're to accept your argument that, well, there's going to be some entities that maybe don't accept that for some reason, what evidence is there in the record that this is likely to reoccur with Mr. Kiernan or anybody else when the prison has said, we'll notify your staff, we'll notify your staff in the future, you have the lieutenant or somebody come in on that?
Your Honor, that's kind of an allusion to the capable of repetition but evading review doctrine. We're not asserting that specific doctrine, but I will say that that does fit into the construct of the voluntary cessation doctrine as well. I think the evidence is in the fact of how long that it's taken. We have evidence in the record of Mr. Kieran's petition at 1 ROA 32 and 35. It talks about other orders of other inmates dealing with this thing. This is a continual issue that was kind of short-circuited from being developed.
We're here now, and they've made this statement that they're going to do it. It's not like the Longstreth case that you all cited where they had a policy that they violated in the past, and then they reinstituted that same policy. So the inmates could say, yeah, we tried in the past, and you violated that policy. Here they've said, we're going to do everything moving forward to notarize these documents.
You know, Your Honor, could I briefly respond to your question?
Yes.
You know, we don't feel that those assurances are in the record. We don't have confidence given the history. I mean, we don't think it's absolutely clear, even accepting if this were moot, that it's absolutely clear that this conduct isn't going to recur. You know, I think there's a lot of history in this case that, you know, makes everyone quite nervous about that, and we don't see any lasting policy change that's been adopted by NDOC. We have representations from counsel, and Mr. Davis is as honorable as they come, but we need this on the record from NDOC, and we don't have that in the record.
Okay. Colleagues, any other questions?
No, thank you.
Nope. All right. The matter will stand submitted. The court will stand in recess. So the next colleague court...